12.2. The Apollo Project.
10, 9, we have ignition sequence start. The engines are on. 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. We have commit. We have liftoff. Liftoff at 7:51.
The inspirational effect of Apollo, which touched so many of us watching from Earth, was largely driven by the pictures which these missions returned. Views of human explorers on an alien world fueled our imaginations. And those images of our home planet, filmed by men who were so far away from home, had an even more profound effect. In December 1968, Apollo 8, only the second manned Apollo mission, was sent straight to the moon. It was the first time any astronauts had left low Earth orbit, and if everything went to plan, Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, and Bill Anders would become the first humans to see the far side of the moon with their own eyes.
Actually, I think the best way to describe this area is a vastness of black and white. Absolutely no color. The sky up here is also a rather forbidding, promoting expanse of blackness with no stars visible when we're flying over the Earth, over the moon in daylight.
But it wasn't their unique views of the moon which these missions became most famous for. It was their views of the Earth, rising over the barren lunar surface, which fired the imaginations of us all. Historian Robert Poole is the author of Earthrise, How Man First Saw the Earth.
The NASA head of photography, Dick Underwood, was keen on getting photographs of the Earth. He'd had a lot of experience, but he was pretty much a lone voice in NASA. So although he'd done his best to prepare them for taking photographs, they weren't prepared in any professional kind of way. So when they did actually see the Earth rise from lunar orbit, it did take them completely by surprise, and you can hear the surprise in their voices. Wow, look at that.
Oh my God, look at that picture over there. There's the Earth coming up. Wow, that's pretty.
Yes, it's about the fourth orbit or something, isn't it? And there's a real scramble for the camera and some colour film, I think.
You got a colour film, Jim? Hand me a roll of colour, quick.
Oh man, that's great.
Where is it? Quick.
Yes, they didn't have a camera ready. They only had black and white film in the one that they were using. The spaceship had only just turned around to face the right way. They were busy doing something else, and suddenly one of them said, "Look, there's the Earth." What, in retrospect, was the most significant moment, possibly the entire Apollo program, looking back and seeing the Earth in context.
The fact that no one planned those pictures seems extraordinary now. But the astronauts' encounter with the Earth would inspire future Apollo crews to look back with new eyes on their home planet.
Yes, everything's looking good here, Apollo 9.
Okay.
We'll try to have your cutoff time shortly.
Apollo 9 was intended to test the entire Apollo flight system in Earth orbit, and astronaut Rusty Schweikart would make a spacewalk to test an emergency procedure for transferring between the Apollo capsule and the lunar module in case the two failed to connect.
Mr.
Schweikart,
proceed
outdoors.
Okay,
the camera
on there, standby.
Okay,
proceeding on
now. On board, his colleagues Jim McDivitt and Dave Scott would capture his progress on camera. But as his test began, their camera broke. And whilst they were fixing it, Rusty ended up with 5 minutes outside on his own.
Oh dear, that looks comfortable.
During that 5 minutes that Dave took to try and repair the camera, which frankly never happened, I held onto the handrail only with one hand, my left hand, and I sort of swung around to get a full view of the Earth and the horizon, just the spectacular beauty of the Earth. I mean, the blackness is so black, and the horizon is this brilliant thin band of blue, which is the atmosphere above the blue and white Earth. I mean, the contrast, the reality of what you're looking at, I mean, it is incredibly impressive.
This would have been a wholly personal experience if Rusty hadn't been invited to speak at a major conference organized by the Lindisfarne Association in Long Island, New York, a couple of years later. Despite preparing for several hours, he had no idea what he was going to say until he found himself on stage.
And then I opened my mouth and I talked, and it was as if I was sitting in the audience going through the experience of flying in space at many different levels, actually. The physical level, sort of a technical diary almost, and then finally at a kind of spiritual level. And I had absolutely no plan to do that. I mean, it would just came out that way, and by the time I was done, half of the people in the audience were crying, including me.
Okay, pull in.
You look down there, and you can't imagine how many borders and boundaries you cross, again and again and again, and you don't even see them. There you are, hundreds of people in the Middle East, killing each other over some imaginary line that you're not even aware of, that you can't see. And from where you see it, the thing is a whole, and it's so beautiful. You wish you could take one in each hand, one from each side in the various conflicts, and say, look, look at it from this perspective. Look at that. What's important?
That spontaneous lecture, later titled No Frames, No Boundaries, and transcribed as an essay about the Earth and us, resonated with the burgeoning peace and environmental movements of the time. And the images of Earth that poured back from the 8 subsequent Apollo flights to the moon continued to raise our awareness of just how fragile our home planet seems to be.